Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, listener. I'm glad you're here. Take a seat next to the fire.
Welcome to Obscura, where we shine a light on the dark.
Almost 40,000 prisoners in the Department of Corrections. In 1973, that number was 5,600. That was the year the giant Sears Tower in Chicago was completed, changing the landscape of the city forever. 1973 was 18 years before the World Wide Web was invented. There were no personal computers, no mobile phones, smartphones, tablets, or Kindles. People read paperback books. They went out to the movie theater to watch a film. DNA hadn't been used in a criminal trial yet, and wouldn't be for another 13 years. The world 47 years ago was different, but the act of murder, the taking of another human's life, sadly was not. In 1973, three brutal murders were carried out along Interstate 57 in Illinois. The man responsible with three accomplices was Henry Brisbin. He was just 17 years old. Henry Brisbin has been called the poster child for capital punishment. He is a man whose violent history has left a trail of destruction behind him. This story is about the lives he destroyed. At the time these murders occurred, in June of 1973, across the city of Chicago, there was another man who would prove to be as dangerous, if not more dangerous, as Henry Brisbin, a man who preyed on men exactly the age Brisbin was when he took the lives of three innocent victims on I-57, John Wayne Gacy. His murderous activities, yet to be discovered a mere handful of miles away from where Brisbin was operating, would all be found out and send Gacy to death row, a place where he would encounter the violence of Henry Brisbin for himself. Now, let's get on with it. Part 1. Murder on I-57. On the evening of June 3rd, 1973, at 10:56 p.m., the Cook County Sheriff's Office in Illinois received a phone call from a shocked motorist on Interstate 57. He reported two bodies lying on a grassy verge at the edge of the highway, near Country Club Hills, just west of Flossmoor Village. As police vehicles raced to the scene, they puzzled over what had happened. I-57 runs from Sykeston in Missouri to Chicago in Illinois, covering a distance of 386 miles. Populated with exit ramps to access the various cities and towns along the route, I-57 was easily accessible from multiple areas. When sheriff's officers arrived at the scene, they found a young man and woman lying face down in the grass. Their hands and arms were over their heads, and they each had one single bullet wound in their upper back. For seasoned officers at first glance, this looked like an execution. The state police identified the two bodies as Dorothy Cerny and James Schmidt. Both were only 25 years old. They were a young couple in love who had planned to be married in November that year. That night, they had been at the first communion party for Dorothy's nephew in Madison, just 3 miles away from where their bodies were found. They had left the party 90 minutes earlier, driving their new red Dodge, which was now nowhere to be seen. Dorothy was an elementary school teacher in Derwin, the small city just south of Chicago where they lived, and proud that she was soon to be married. Her much-loved engagement ring was now missing from her left hand. James worked at a trucking firm in Chicago. His pockets had been turned inside out and were now empty. Dorothy's purse was also missing. As officers began to work the scene, they were told of a police report called in less than an hour before Dorothy and James had been found. 43-year-old Doris Bell had been driving home along I-57. After attending church services in Kankakee, around 9:15 p.m. that evening, she had become aware of headlights behind her. Headlights that were getting rapidly closer. The vehicle behind bumped into hers. It was a light bump, but enough to make Doris pull over to the shoulder. The offending vehicle did the same, and she watched through a rearview mirror as the driver got out and walked towards the driver's side of her vehicle. As she wound down her window, she saw a neatly dressed young man who politely apologized to her. "I must have fallen asleep at the wheel," he told her. She asked him if there was any damage to the back of her vehicle. He wasn't sure, he said, but maybe she should check. As Doris got out of her vehicle, she was startled by a second man exiting the vehicle behind. He was holding a 12-gauge shotgun and was pointing it right at her. She was ordered to get back into her vehicle and move over onto the passenger seat. Doris Bell made an astonishing decision at that moment. She looked at the gunman and refused his commands. "God is the one who can protect me," she told him. She turned and got back into her vehicle. She put the gear into drive and drove away, getting back up to speed on the interstate as fast as she could. That courageous decision saved her life. When she arrived home, she called the police to report what had happened. By the time her call was connected, there had been another murder, along I-57, and it wasn't Dorothy and James. Betty Lou Harmon. As the young couple were facing terror at the hands of their killer, 26 miles away in the village of Manteno in Kankakee County, 29-year-old Betty Lou Harmon was saying goodbye to her mother. She had visited that evening from her home in Darien, DuPage County, to drop off her little white poodle, Shabby. 26 miles away in the village of Manteno, he would be staying at her mother's for the next 2 weeks. Betty and her husband were off on vacation to Niagara Falls in the next few days. Betty said goodbye to her mother, got into her green Chevrolet, and set off home. It was a journey she had driven often, and she'd be home within the hour. Betty Lou Harmon left Manteno and joined I-57 at 10 o'clock on Sunday night. The sun had long gone down, and the lanes of the highway were encased in darkness. It was an easy drive. Traffic was light at that time of night. Most had already made it home from their weekends away and Sunday outings, ready for the start of another work week the following day. Betty Lou Harmon, who was so looking forward to her holiday with her husband, would not be joining them. Near the Eisenhower Expressway, a police cruiser from nearby Maxwell saw a green vehicle speed past them around 11 p.m. on that Sunday night. Lights on, they immediately gave chase. The speeding Chevrolet had a few seconds on them, and by the time they caught up in a neighborhood area near Central Park Avenue, they saw it crash into a park station wagon. Residents still out on their porches on a warm summer's night had witnessed a young man jump out of the vehicle and run down an alley. That young man returned to the vehicle when he was sure he had lost the police on his trail. After carefully checking the street, he strolled back to the vehicle, reached in through the driver's door, and pulled out a shotgun. Putting it under his jacket, he asked one of the residents if they would hide the weapon for him. They refused. The man shrugged and calmly walked away. Betty Lou Harmon was an administrative assistant at the Madden State Hospital in Hines, 11 miles to the west of Chicago. Her boss and friend, Noble Emd, became immediately concerned when she did not arrive for work on Monday morning. He spoke with her husband, Gerald, who was a conductor for the Illinois Central Gulf Railroad, and working away on that Sunday and Monday, Gerald and Noble realized Betty hadn't made it home the previous evening. They had seen the news. They knew of the double murder that happened on I-57 the same road Betty would have been driving to get home. Noble hired a small plane and pilot on that Monday morning from a DuPage County airport. Once in the air and flying at 1,500 feet, he and the pilot scanned the grassy verges and marshland areas along the edges of Interstate 57. Using binoculars, Noble spotted what he thought was a nude sunbather about 1,000 yards from the highway edge near a large sewage lake. As he looked closer, he realized his worst fear. It was a woman's body.
Listener, you know all the extra fees we have to pay in life. You know the fees. Hidden and everything from concerts to movie tickets. A Chime checking account makes financial progress easier with features like no maintenance fees, fee-free overdraft up to $200, or getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. Chime is a financial institute built with a sense of community. In my opinion, they accomplish this with boosts. That's right, listener. Eligible members get complimentary boosts to temporarily increase a friend's SpotMe limit. When you give a boost, they can boost you back to temporarily raise your limit. Join millions of Chime members who are working on financial progress. With over 50,000 fee-free ATMs, you won't be left wasting your money on withdrawals. Make progress towards a better financial future with Chime. Open your account in 2 minutes at chime.com/obscura. That's chime.com/obscura. Chime. Feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank, N.A. or Stride Bank, N.A. Members FDIC SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Timing depends on submission of payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pilot noted the location and landed at the nearest available airport. Noble called the police to notify them of what he had seen from the highway. With Noble giving directions, Betty Lou Harmon's body was found lying in a grassland inside of a fenced area surrounding the lake. Betty had no clothes on. None of her personal possessions were nearby. She had been shot in the neck with what looked like a large caliber weapon. The police sheriff later commented that her body would never have been seen from the road. Without Noble Emd searching in that small plane, there's a good chance her body would not have been found. The green Chevrolet, chased by the Maxwell police cruiser on the Sunday night, proved to be Betty Lou Harmon's vehicle. The man seen leaving the vehicle with a gun hidden was now the prime suspect in the murder. Will County Medical Examiner Willard Blood carried out an autopsy on June 5th at Silver Cross Hospital in Joliet. He was able to confirm it was the gun blast to her neck at close range that had been her cause of death. But he had further devastating news for her family. On examination, he had found there was a second gunshot wound. Betty Lou Harmon had most likely been raped by her killer, who had then inserted the gun barrel inside of her and fired. For 2 years, police officers from Cook and Will counties continued to work the I-57 murder case with the help of Chicago police. They had linked the murders of Betty Lou Harmon, Dorothy Cerny, and James Schmidt, and were confident they'd been committed by the same person or persons. On June 6, they had found Dorothy Cerny's missing red Dodge. It had been abandoned a mile away from where they had found Betty Lou Harmon's vehicle, but they were yet to identify any suspects. In October 1975, 2 years after the I-57 murders, Robert Lee was incarcerated at the Statesville Penitentiary in Illinois, a male prison. Statesville has a long and colorful history, including a period as an execution site for prisoners sentenced to death. Located 2 miles to the north of Joliet, prisoners from the surrounding areas found themselves locked up here. Robert Lee had been sentenced to 20 to 50 years for murder and in prison since 1970. his assigned job role at Stateville was in the prison library. He was the inmate law librarian, helping other inmates with gaining access to courts and with their paperwork for post-conviction appeals. In mid-October that year, he met an inmate by the name of Henry Brisbane. At 19 years old, he was serving a 6 to 18 year sentence for rape and robbery, a crime he claimed he did not commit. Henry Brisbane was a 5'9", medium-built African-American, his dark hair blending with large glasses. He has been described as bookish in appearance. The conviction that put him in prison was an offense carried out with an accomplice, Tony Sanford. On February 2, 1975, a student nurse who worked in Cook County had been scraping ice from her vehicle windshield at around 11:15 p.m., preparing for a night shift. A vehicle had appeared alongside her in the parking lot. The man had stepped out of the passenger seat, holding a shotgun, and ordered her back into her own vehicle and into the back seat. The man got inside beside her, while his accomplice got in the driver's seat. She was driven for about 15 minutes to an isolated area behind a row of townhouses. There she was ordered to undress before she was raped by both men. Once the assault was over, she was driven back to the parking lot, where the men got back into their own vehicle and left. She immediately drove to her workplace and reported the attack to the police. As the men had gotten back into their own vehicle, she'd been able to see and memorize their number plate, AA3189. This gave police the lead on the case. That vehicle was spotted by a police patrol vehicle 5 days later, and after a short chase, both occupants had given themselves up. Both men, a student was able to identify as her attackers. Just under 2 weeks before his 16th birthday, Henry Brisbane had kidnapped a woman at gunpoint and raped her. Both were found guilty at a bench trial held in December 1973. After discussing his case with Robert Lee, Henry Brisbane asked if he had heard of the I-57 murders. Robert had little access to television or crime news in the 5 years he had been behind bars and told him he hadn't. Henry Brisbane went on to tell him he had committed those murders. He gave detail, graphic detail, on the events of that night 2 years earlier. There was no remorse in his voice. His words did not reflect of a man deeply sorry for his actions. His entire demeanor was the exact opposite. Henry Brisbane was proud of what he had done that night. He was jovial, bright-eyed, and excited while telling his story. He had carried out the I-57 murders while he was out on bond for the rape and armed robbery of the student nurse the year before, at still only 17 years old. The threat of incarceration did nothing to curb his desire to commit violence. Disturbed by what he had heard, Robert Lee spoke with a medical technician in the prison who passed the information on to police. They began to investigate Brisbane, his criminal history, who he was friends with. They wanted to be armed with all the information before they spoke with him directly. When the state police did arrive to interview him months later, Brisbane was taken aback by their visit. Initially, he toyed with them. He said he wasn't part of the murders, but a friend had told him the details. The officers weren't convinced and returned a few days later to press him further. He wanted to talk about a deal, what the state would do for him if he provided them with information. A visit from an assistant state's attorney was enough to get him to talk. Brisbane gave his edited version of events and gave the names of those who were with him on that night: David Sanders, Daryl Thompson, and Stanley Charleston. In March 1976, Brisbane's three accomplices were arrested by Cook County State Police. All four men were charged with murder, armed robbery, and conspiracy. The murder charges were for the deaths of Dorothy Cerny and James Schmidt. The murder of Betty Lou, which had happened in Will County, was being held on file while prosecutors waited for the outcome of these Cook County trials. Stanley Charleston and Daryl Thompson, the elder two of the group at 22 years old, pled guilty and agreed to testify against Brisbane as being the one who pulled the trigger. In exchange, they would not go to trial and would be given lighter sentences for their cooperation, Sanders took another approach. He claimed he was there and involved. He was forced into it by the other three. He would stand trial separately to Brisbane. It would be at Henry Brisbane's trial, which started in September 1977 at the Circuit Court of Cook County, that the families of the I-57 victims would finally learn the truth about what had happened to their loved ones. On September 19th, before testimony started, the jury was taken by bus to visit the scenes on I-57, where the bodies were found. Judge James Bailey walked the jury through the different crime scenes. Henry Brisbane was also present. Now 21 years old, in handcuffs and flanked by police officers, his relaxed smiles and happy attitude were disturbing sights for the 12 jury members. At the time of the I-57 murders, Brisbane and Thompson were 17 years old, and Charleston and Sanders were 19 years old. Four young men, all under the age of 20. On the night of June 3rd, 1973, the group had decided to attend a party where they planned to take drugs and get high, and then rob a pizza parlor to see how much cash they could get. They drove from Chicago to Kankakee in Sanders' Subaru to another friend's home to borrow his 12-gauge shotgun. As they got near the planned robbery target, the presence of the police vehicles in the area unnerved them. As they were driving on I-57 back to Chicago, it was Henry Brisbane's idea to find people who they could rob. Brisbane suggested they purposely hit vehicles on the interstate to make them pull over to the side of the road.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.